Sam Rejofsky, Sam Nation, Talk Radio 790 KBC. All right, Wednesday, hump day. We're right in the middle of the week and plowing right through it. I'll tell you this. I want to talk about the speech, and I will. I heard it, I watched it, and I loved it. But before I do, because this, I think, provides some context to see the kind of the bigger picture of what's going on. Before Trump gave his speech, the Daily Mail online had an interesting article about President Obama's post-presidency plans. Now, don't worry, this all ties into the speech and the Democrats' reaction to it, and kind of what now I think is going to be a little bit of a rethink on where the Democrats are going to go with their opposition to Trump, which has been so far, as you know, totally shrill. So here is what, now, mind you, this all happened. This is all based on information that preceded Trump's joint session of Congress speech that happened last night. So apparently, Trump is not the White House is not the only place that has leaks. It turns out that Obama's inner circle also has some loose-lipped people, and these people are starting to talk to the press. And one of these people is actually, they're described here in by Daily Mail as a presidential, a close Obama family confidant, a family source. And the discussion is about what role, if any, Obama plans to play in politics now that he's out of office, he's retired. Remember, he's still a really young guy. So what's he going to do with his time? And the source, they now get the reporters asking him. They say, so what's Obama going to do vis-a-vis Trump? You know, seems like there's a lot of opposition, and Obama's this terrible homophobic racist, and he's going to tear down the entire Obama legacy. And the family source says Obama was at first reluctant to assume the role of leader of the opposition. No longer the most powerful man in the world, he was just observing Trump. Now, this is the family friend that's talking about Obama. He was just observing Trump and not liking what he saw. Well, okay, so Obama doesn't like what Trump is doing. And of course, because Trump is taking a sledgehammer to Obamacare and every other stupid thing that Obama did while he's in office. So I could see that. Quote continues. He, and I'm talking, the source here is talking about Obama. He was weary and burned out after 8 years in office. You know, all that golfing and all those expensive vacations to Martha's Vineyard really took a toll on him. So now that he's recovered in the Caribbean, you know, he took that 4-week trip or whatever it was to the private island, Necker Island in the Caribbean. He's back. He's ready to do this. And then a name comes up, which is really important. This is the person to watch, Valerie. Valerie, and this is Valerie Jarrett, and I'm going to tell you more about her in a minute, convinced him that he didn't have any choice if he wanted to save his legacy. And as usual, he bowed to Valerie's political wisdom and advice. All right, so who is this lady? Why? So this is lady supposedly here, according to the source, is convincing Obama to get his head back in the game and to become the leader of the opposition. The anti-Trumpers need somebody to coalesce behind. Now, I'm going to tell you why this is all great news, especially if you like Trump. And if you don't like Trump, this is bad news. But I'll tell you it's great news. But first, let me tell you who Valerie Jarrett is. So you know who? She's the Obama family consigliere, right? She's like, if they're a crime family, you know, she's the person behind the scenes who's giving a lot of advice. Both Michelle and Barack Obama, they love her and they listen to her. And supposedly no major decision that they've ever made, right, while they're in the in the White House, everything was run through Valerie Jarrett. I've even heard this. She apparently had an apartment inside the White House. Very unusual. And when they moved, when the Obamas moved out and the Trumps were moving in, what happened? Valerie moves out to the home in Washington, D.C., where Trump where Obama's moved out to, all right, where he's going to be living soon. But this is just to paint the picture that he's building his political machine, right? He's already taking his trusted confidants and keeping them in Washington, D.C. He also set up his office in Washington, D.C., right? He's got his post-presidential office, but you can't use that for politics. So he's probably going to use his home or some other office to lead this coordinated attack on Trump. This is how bad the Democrats, think about this. This is how bad the Democratic Party has it right now. The best they can do, and the reason there's all this buzz is because Democrats are excited about this. They're going, yes, finally, Obama's back. But guess what? Obama can't be president again. He can't run. He's not going to, he has no political future. And I think the last thing you want as a Democratic Party is to have this guy hanging around and be leading some kind of a faux, kind of half-baked opposition that is not by a person who has no political future in his own right. I mean, if you're the Democratic Party, right, wouldn't you want at this point to have somebody come along that could perhaps, be elected into some high office? The most comical thing to all of this, and we're going to get to the Trump speech here. I want to go through it. But I mean, did you hear the rebuttal? Typically how these things work, the president gives his big speech. And then the opposition party, the other party of which he is not, they'll have their rebuttal to it. And usually what they do is they'll pick someone that is, somebody who's a rising star. They'll want to shine a light. Who I think in this case would, like Cuomo or somebody like that. Nothing. What did they pick? Former Kentucky Governor Steve Beshear, who basically looked like a knock-kneed somnambulist on his way to the glue factory to be put out of his misery. No joke. He actually stuttered. He couldn't remember if he was a Republican or a Democrat. He said, I'm a Republican, I'm a Democrat, but mostly a Democrat and an American. It was incoherent. It put people to sleep. I mean, even the drive-bys, who was it? Maddow? Rachel Maddow panned it as being a terrible speech. So here they are. The best they've got is Obama, and they got former Kentucky Governor Steve Beshear. And so it's an interesting thing. On one hand, the media wants to criticize Trump. They want to tear him down. They're calling him all these things, such as ineffective, right? Branding him a bigot, branding him a racist, branding him a horrible person. He's going to be out of office. It's not even going to take 4 years for him to be, he's not even going to make it 4 years. But at the same time, there's no one else to fill the vacuum. And so you know who filled it? Trump himself. And he did it in this speech, and he did it in a tremendously powerful and effective way. Now, I want to tell you, I'll start here with the ending. And this is how he ended the speech, because you probably heard that it was a unifying speech. You might have also heard wrongly that he moderated in the speech. And I'll explain later why that did not happen. But here's something, this is something that Trump, I'm going to play the clip here, where Trump directly and deliberately spoke to his many critics, especially on the other side of the aisle and in the media. And he declares that the time for trivial things is over. This is a very powerful line, maybe one of the most powerful lines in the speech.
The time for small thinking is over. The time for trivial fights is behind us. We just need the courage to share the dreams that fill our hearts, the bravery to express the hopes that stir our souls, and the confidence to turn those hopes and those dreams into action. From now on, America will be empowered by our aspirations, not burdened by our fears. Inspired by the future, not bound by failures of the past, and guided by a vision, not blinded by our doubts.
There it is. So while Obama is busy setting up with Valerie Jarrett, headquarters of the Never Trump, anti-Trump, dump Trump movement. Obama, the very guy who every speech, remember this was always so dark about America? I mean, America, it was always speeches of all the bad things that we did. Of all the ways, all the wrongs that it was our duty now to correct. All the wrongs that we were always apologizing for. I mean, I'm telling you, 8 years we watched this when we listened to this nonsense. And here you had the president. You had Trump up there declaring not just that it's time for these trivial things to be over, but we're not going to apologize for anything. We're going to be great. We're going to do great things. We will aspire as one nation to do incredible things. And to achieve incredible things. It was lofty. It was aspirational. It was positive. And I liked it. And you know what? I'm not alone. You know, what was it? 7 out of 10 viewers on CNN thought it was excellent. You know, that's not a small number, by the way. I don't know who, by the way, CNN watchers, I realize I'm one of them. I have to see what the enemy's doing. You know, I gotta keep my eyes on him. But you've got to understand. I mean, people overwhelmingly, as I scanned through the networks last night and I was checking the news and I was seeing people's reactions on Twitter, I can tell you this unequivocally: people reacted to this with enormous positivity. And he continues this line in this train of thought. This is how he ended the speech. And I like to start with the end because it's really, this is where his thesis of everything that he's saying comes together. And then I'll parse out some of the details later as we proceed this hour. But here's what the next part of what he said and how he ended the speech.
I am asking all citizens to embrace this renewal of the American spirit. I am asking all members of Congress to join me in dreaming big and bold and daring things for our country. I am asking everyone watching tonight to seize this moment, believe in yourselves, believe in your future, and believe once more in America. Thank you, God bless you, and God bless the United States.
It was so patriotic, but it was also, it emphasized the individual, right? This is a core principle that we as conservatives believe. Okay, it's not the government doesn't come along and save your money, you know, at every turn. You do. You are empowered to decide your fate, to chart your path in life. And this speech, and we don't have time to all the different parts of it, but the speech, for the most part, at every turn, addressed the de-emphasis of government, the de-emphasis of state. And at pretty much every opportunity he had, highlighted the enabling of the individual, lowering taxes, lowering regulation, protecting the border, protecting our workers, protecting trade, making trade fair. Okay, has a big emphasis in this speech. But it talked about individuals, and nowhere, by the way, it didn't say when he talked about healthcare. Another great turn. Got to make it affordable so that people can buy it. It's not about giving it away. It's not about creating a government program. It's about allowing the companies, the healthcare companies, to have open markets, open borders, interstate, and be able to compete to drive down prices so that individuals can buy their own coverage. And so I think, you know, as we go through it here, you got to think about this in the back of your mind, because you've probably heard, all right, you're hearing that the speech was good. Maybe you didn't listen to all of it or you caught a snippet of it, whatever the case is, but you're hearing that the speech was good. And the second thing is, you're probably wondering, you've probably heard, well, you know, he moderated some stuff. And I'm going to show you here coming up why that's not true. I mean, he stuck to his principles. He won people over and yet didn't give them an inch. So I don't know where that leaves opposition Obama. You know, he can hang out over in his bat cave plan his attacks against Trump. But there's just one sneaky bit of suspicion in my mind that Obama was watching the speech, or at least saw parts of it afterwards, and thought, I might want to revisit and rethink this plan. Because Trump is, as usual, for a non-professional politician, enormously politically talented. And I've said this from the beginning. All right, more of the speech when we come up next here right after the break. Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, Talk Radio 790 KABC.
News. Talk. Evolve. Talk Radio 790 KABC.
All right, here we are talking about Trump and his, I think, incredible speech that he gave to a joint session of Congress last night. And I played for you the ending of it, which was such a great, I think a great plea again for unity and for individuals to prosper and to grow. Now, I'll tell you, this is how the speech opened, and it was with a deeply personal Trump, a very human Trump. And here's what he said.
I am here tonight to deliver a message of unity and strength, and it is a message deeply delivered from my heart. A new chapter. Of American greatness is now beginning. A new national pride is sweeping across our nation, and a new surge of optimism is placing impossible dreams firmly within our grasp. What we are witnessing today is the renewal of the American spirit.
Exactly. Now, I gotta paint a little picture for you here. When he said, from my heart, he stopped at that point in the speech. You could hear the applause, but he actually put his hand on his heart. And it was something new for Trump. I got to say, it was I've seen some of it in the rallies, certainly, but I don't. There are a number of people, you got to understand, there's a number of people watching the speech who are ready to see a total just carnival. Because this is the problem with the Dems. They've bought into the very silliness and rhetorical absurdity that they're selling. They've bought in their own BS. And so they've painted this caricature of Trump, and all of a sudden this guy right at the get-go stands up there and says, "Hey, I'm bringing you this message from the bottom of my heart. It's a very personal message." And he places his hand on his heart and goes on to say how this is a new chapter, new national pride, new surge of optimism in our time, a renewal of the American spirit. And the caricature that they're fighting against, right? The idea that there's this guy who's just going to get up there in front of all of Congress and the world and the TV cameras, he's just going to turn into a total buffoon. And instead he gets up there and starts the speech off from a place of humility. All right? Now, all right. So what do I make of this, right? I think one of the reasons that the speech was so effective was that Trump does really well when he's in front of a big crowd. And you see this when he does his when he does his rallies. Because, and I'll tell you this, it's a very different feeling speaking, for example, like I am right now, in a microphone. I know you're out there, right? I know you're out there, but I don't see you. All I see is Robbie here and Missy and Bill. I don't get to, you know, it's a different thing when I know this, when I'm in front of a large crowd, there's an energy there. You know, there's a big difference between talking to a group of people, even just a press conference. And that press conference, you got a bunch of hostile media, you know, and they hate Trump, Trump hates them, but there's a certain negative energy there. Now, he walked into the room. This is before the speech. This is before he hit a home run and then some. The applause in the chamber was incredible. I mean, he got a standing ovation. Now, not from everybody. There were a lot of stone-faced Democrats. I told you Nancy Pelosi looked like death warmed over. You had a 66. Did you see the white ladies? No. I'm talking about their clothes. Not. They were all dressed. 66 female congressional Dems came all dressed in white. You know, in Asia, white is the color of mourning. I don't know what it was, but yes, it was. I know what it is. They wore white to protest Trump and to show their support for Planned Parenthood. I have no idea, but that's what that was about. So when you saw the camera shots down and you saw a bunch of people dressed wearing white, they were all women, all Democratic congresswomen. And by the way, is that really the time and place for that? It's a little, this is it. The Democrats, still so tone deaf, walked into there, wanted to make a protest, thought they were going to get Trump the buffoon up there. And, you know, millions of Americans tuned into this thing. The ratings were through the roof. Social media blew up over it. So people, if they didn't catch the speech, were catching snippets of it later. And for many people, including people in the media, it looked like first exposure to Trump. And people were just short-circuiting left and right because they couldn't believe that what they were seeing was somebody who was actually being human. I thought he was very gracious, too. He had gave shout-outs, if you will, to a number of people in the crowd. And when Obama used to do this, by the way, he'd always say, hey, you know, I got so-and-so up there. Hey, man, hey, cool, man. We're good, yeah. Like, it was always a little too brotastic. And Trump, you know, was just, you know, I've got this widow and she got, by the way, the widow of the slain serviceman. I mean, she got what was probably the longest standing ovation in any of these speeches in history. And it was beautiful. And she looked upward, you know, at heaven and mouthed, I love you, baby, to her husband that was being honored. I mean, it was, I'm telling you, there's no way that anybody who has, even the Tin Man from Wizard of Oz, his heart would have been touched by this. But with the positive energy in the room, with all of this, you got to remember, Trump still maintained to hold firm on some of his promises. Now, I'll give you one example of this. You got the Great, Great Wall clip. Here's what he talks about the wall. You know the famous wall down between us and Mexico, the Great Wall? Well, here is just how great it is. Play the tape.
We must restore integrity and the rule of law at our borders.
Democrats were not clapping here, sitting down, looking stone-faced.
For that reason, we will soon begin the construction of a great, great wall along our southern border.
And the crowd went wild. Because, you know, China's got a great wall, so we got to have something different, you know? We got to have, like, the great, great wall. That sounds pretty great to me. I don't know about you. But look, I mean, he didn't back down from it is my point. He didn't start saying, well, you know, maybe it's going to be more of a fence or a picket fence or a curb. All right, back after this. Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, Talk Radio, 790 KBC.
Talk Radio.
790 KABC.
All right, Sam Rogowski here. I always talk about Sweet James at this point in time in the program. And I you know, here I wanted to actually give a real example. I was talking to James today. He's handling a case, interesting deal. A young couple, they've got, you'd know the company if you'd heard it. Major utility company comes over to their home. They send out a contractor, and the guy comes out to the house, and he basically gets caught rummaging through some of their very personal effects. And the whole question is now, do I have a case? Right? I mean, what do I do here? They feel violated. I can't even, you know, I can't even tell you exactly how horrible they feel. Can you imagine? Right? There you are. You invite some guy to come out to your house, and he's starting to, you know, go through your stuff. It's crazy. Personal stuff. I have to leave it there. But imagine that. You know, I always talk to you about some, you know, these crazy things that happen in the news and these theoretical, you know, theoretical cases. But the fact of the matter is, anywhere from a very basic rear-end auto accident to an invasion of privacy case to a dog bite, these are the type of cases that James handles. And he does them really well. You know, you need a lawyer when you've got a problem like this that you can trust, that people know, right? That a name that people respect. You don't want just some guy with a jingle. Nobody respects the guy with the jingle, you know? There's just, you know, that's not it. You've got to have somebody who's got a reputation in the community, who people like, and who can persuade action to happen on your case. And so that's why we here on the show, we love Sweet James. James Bergner, he's our guy. And if you or a loved one has had something happen, you know, just call. You know, there are so many different types of cases that are in his wheelhouse that he can handle, and he does very well on. So, you know, you know the number, right? 800-881-2021, 1-800-881-2021, or visit his website. It's sweetjames.com. All right. Now, you know, I couldn't believe my ears. I'm going to shift course here a little bit. I may come back to the speech, so just follow me on this, because it all ties in thematically. This was earlier in the week. I know we were off for a couple days because of the Kings, so I didn't have a chance to bring this to your attention as it happened, although I did send out a tweet. I couldn't resist. So I just about fell out of my chair when I saw this headline in the New York Post. George W. Bush defends the indispensable media. He goes on to talk about, it's basically a slam against Trump. You know, it's Bush's reaction to Trump's press conference where he crucified them. And it reminds me of Bush himself. My God, I mean, how long ago was it that he was standing up there getting grilled? I mean, I'm not even going to say sautéed. He was getting seared alive by the press. They called him, you know, they put him somewhere between Satan and Hitler. And I don't know which of the end is better or worse. But come on, you were there. You remember this. They were literally skinning the guy alive, and you'll remember what Bush did, right? I mean, he just stood there and took it and turned the other cheek because he was a good Christian guy, or whatever. And I remember this as a conservative. I remember looking at it, I said, "My God, man, defend yourself, stand up, explain." And he never did. And it's one of the reasons why I am so enthralled from the get-go with Trump, because the guy doesn't matter. He just slaps these people around like they're, you know, and he stands up for himself. So I'm listening to this. I'm reading this article. "I consider the media to be indispensable to democracy. We need media to hold people like me to account." What is it? It's like a battered spouse. You know, this guy's bit. He was in an 8-year abusive relationship with the press, and he pops up, you know, and the media's still being horrible to Bush, by the way. It's still calling him an idiot and nincompoop, all this stuff, you know, horrible thing. And he pops up to defend the press. This is Stockholm syndrome, you know, when you identify with your captors. This is totally delusional. Him and McCain, they need to go straight to the same, you know, Alzheimer's home or wherever they are to sort this nonsense out. Unbelievable. All right, back after this. Sam Rojofsky, Sam Nation, Talk Radio 790 KBC.
Talk Radio 790
KABC.
All right, Sam Rojofsky here. Look, you know when I said that, you know, the Democrats, of course, were pouty-faced in the audience during the Trump speech, And I tell you, they were very somber, especially somber during certain parts of the speech, which, by the way, and especially this one, I'm going to play this clip for you. Now, as Trump gets to the key line here, and I'll let you decide what you think the key line is, okay? Just picture this. The Republicans, right, on the Republican members of Congress begin to clap wildly. And the Democrats are just sitting there stone-faced. Play the clip.
We will respect the foreign rights of all nations, and they have to respect our rights as a nation also.
So far, so good. So far, so good.
Free nations are the best vehicle for expressing the will of the people, and America respects the right of all nations.
No globalism. No globalism.
My job is not to represent the world. My job is to represent the United States of America.
Yes, and this is correct. That's the line. That's the line. And the wild applause is all from Republicans, and the Democrats are sitting there like, you know, little girls on the potty. Now, I... Well, do you... Aren't you slightly offended by this? I mean, but no, I know. You know, I know these. Look, I know the left like I know every inch of my body. I get that. But what is so damn controversial about saying I want to be a president? I'm the president of the United States, not of the world. My job is to represent our country's interests, not the world's interests. You know, what we got to think about is this other party out here, this party that got schlonged in this last election, they're the ones that aren't clapping for that line. And I'm telling you, until Democrats can figure out how to clap for that line, because it wasn't always like this. You got to remember, I mean, the Democratic Party, Republican Party, at least they were patriotic. At least they believed in America. At least they believed that our country, hey, you know, hell, we're in Congress. We're getting paid by the American people. Well, shoot, don't you think, you know, Bob, don't you think that we ought to be working for the American people and not for, you know, the Mexican people and the, you know, I mean, I don't get it. I'm totally flabbergasted by this. And, you know, I think I have some good political sense. I do. I think I understand, don't understand very many things, but I do understand, I have a sense for what somewhat the outcome of certain of things that are said and done. And I'm telling you, as long as the Democratic Party continues to be the party that doesn't stand up and clap for a line like that. And remember, they did clap for other Trump lines in this speech. So this is something that they don't like. They're going to continue to be a wilderness party politically. And I'm going to close with this thought, and this should scare the crap out of every Democrat far and wide. Let me tell you, Dow hit 21,000 this morning. Snap. I woke up, first thing, got an alert. 21,000. And what that tells me is that the day following the speech, when it became clear that Trump, okay, was popular, that people liked it, that they liked what they heard, that his popularity would lead to him being effective and being able to do things without resistance, the markets responded resoundingly positive to that. And that right there, let me tell you, that is it's an insight into what's going on. All right, we're off tomorrow, not here. And then I'm going to Utah, and I'll take you with me on the road. So I will be coming to you live from Utah on Friday. Look forward to that. Have a great couple days. See you Friday. Sam Rajofsky, Sam Nation Talk Radio, 790 KBC. Do the shindig, chop chop, it says I'm gonna win big. Choose not to life of imitation. Distant cuts into the reservation. Deep bump the pistol that you play for. This pump the feeling that you stay for. In News. Talk. Evolve. 790. KABC. And KABC. Los Angeles. Orange County. A Cumulus station.